Welcome to our roundtable panel. Good morning. It is Tuesday, the 3rd of December. I'm Joe Donahue, and we have a terrific group of panelists with us, as we always do. And you are an essential part of the equation, and we do hope, as you've been doing, of writing us. We love to hear from you. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. And we'll check in every once in a while throughout the hour and read what you have to say. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Let me introduce the panel first. First and foremost, I will say that Mike Spain, the associate editor of the Times Union, will be with us. Mike notified us a moment ago that he is stuck in traffic, so he will be here shortly. It's a beast out there. just having come off Northway, I can tell you that it's not great. So I'm sure Mike will be here anytime now. But Rosemary Mayo is able to make it here. She's the University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter. And because he travels at god-awful hours of the morning, like 3 and 4 o'clock, Alan is with us.
You know, I
you don't have a traffic issue, do you?
No. The only traffic issue is sharing the road with a deer. And you have to be careful about that. And I always worry about that.
One of our upcoming topics, I'm trying to save some topics.
Sure.
For the holidays,
because next Thanksgiving.
Well, you know, you don't know when it's going to be, you know, quiet.
Exactly.
But there's a great cover story in Time magazine this week about deer and new ways of dealing with the increasing deer population. All of them not good, at least from a ethical treatment of animal perspective. So we can talk about that in the days to come.
Mm.
Instead, let us talk about what is going on today, because today is far from a slow news day, and we will talk about the train derailment, the Metro-North train derailment in New York City. And it was announced yesterday that apparently the train speed was 82 miles an hour going into a curve where the posted speed was 30 miles an hour.
Right.
And it is the train then hurtled off the tracks, and according to the box, that recorder, data recorder, says that it was nearly three times the speed permitted through the turn. The throttle was still engaged, giving the engine power until 6 seconds before the locomotive in the rear of the train came to a stop around 7:20.
But that's crucial, the idea that that train was being pushed as opposed to being pulled.
Yeah, right.
The locomotive behind.
Yeah. After the train careened toward the Harlem River, killing four people and injuring more than 70. The National Transportation Safety Board is leading the investigation, and a board member, Earl Wehner, says that the train's sudden power shift came very late in the game. The board cautioned that it remained unclear if the speed was the result of human error or of faulty equipment. And I guess you could make a logical case for either at this point.
Yeah, it's completely unclear, so the jury is still out. Some listeners have written to us that yesterday when we talked about this and began talking about the need for infrastructure improvement, this was way premature, and it's really just the driver's fault, the conductor's fault. And I really disagree with that. Why is there a 30-mile-an-hour curve? There have been problems at that curve before. We change roads all the time when it turns out that there's some structural problem with it that makes it more dangerous.
Yeah.
Why should we not do this with railroads?
Well, yeah, you know, let me, as usual, take a little exception. have you ever tried to get on to the Freebie 90 from Henry Johnson Boulevard and cross two lanes of traffic in order?
Going, if we're going to talk about Albany, 787 is terrifying, especially at night and in the rain, going over to Rensselaer with all those sharp curves.
We do some bad jobs now and then. Look, it is what it is. That's Andrew Cuomo's famous saying, it is what it is. He says a lot.
But did his brother ask him about that?
No, although we're going to talk about that on the media project this week. And let me just forward advance Vox Pop for this afternoon. We're going to be talking about, transportation and what scares you.
Interesting.
So people will be able to call up and give their views in person. I am of the opinion that, Rosemary, that if you have a dangerous situation and you make appropriate rules, then nobody should be disobeying those rules.
Of course.
So if it's human error, which is possible, then you have to say, okay, is this guy now criminally responsible? If that is the case, and we don't know that yet.
He even spoken publicly yet? Do we
He's spoken publicly. Yeah. He's spoken to officials.
Interesting.
I
wouldn't want to be him.
So, meanwhile...
Even if he didn't do anything wrong, I wouldn't want to be him. That was a horrific accident. Mm. I can't imagine what that must have been like.
So Chuck Schumer comes out and says the train did make 9 stops before coming to the curve, so clearly the brakes were working a short time before.
Correct.
You know, one of the things that I hope I don't get in trouble for this, but I will say it anyway, as a regular, not so much a Metro North, but certainly on Amtrak, as a regular, although occasionally Metro North, as a rider on a train, I didn't even know they went 82 miles an hour.
Very fast.
That's fast, all right.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you feel like you're walking to Albany or to Penn. But also there's a difference between if there's a 30, and back to Alan's point, I mean, if there's a 30 mile an hour speed there and you're hitting it at, say, 40.
Right.
That's a lot different than hitting it at 82, which I would assume is full speed.
You know, we have to read the tea leaves here. And if Chuck Schumer is saying something cryptic, like it stopped at 7 other stations or 6 other stations, does anybody here believe that he may know something from the transportation people that the rest of us don't know?
Well, that's why I read it. It certainly seems that way.
Well, but it's interesting. A powerful U.S. senator... calling up, you know, getting information. Because, listen, politicians are all out there. Andrew, as you mentioned before, is talking to his brother Chris on CNN. And people are – Bloomberg was criticized for not coming back from – they hint from – where does he live in the Barbados or something like that? He's Bermuda.
Somewhere in the Caribbean.
Bermuda something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so not showing up is a cardinal sin. In politics, when you
have a
disaster.
Tragedy, yeah.
So then,
even when you're a lame duck,
if you need to have a little extra, maybe you call up or you have somebody call up and find out they think.
This is just totally the danger of, you know, commenting on this before we know if that guy was speeding. Then yes, you know, criminal charges. If he was not speeding, what went wrong, and how do we stop it?
Now there was a terrible accident. Rosemary, there was a terrible accident in New York City a couple of years ago. It seems to me, in which somebody was talking on a cell phone.
A conductor?
Was talking on
a
cell
subway,
phone.
Correct.
Subway tried. Yeah.
That's right. And that's the ultimate example of not texting. You guys noticed that that now there's a rest stop going down on, is it 684?
All of them. And of the rest stops in, believe in New York, have been renamed text areas. Text stop areas.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Both pull-offs and traditional rest areas.
Yeah. It's a wonderful law that we have that you should not be texting. I mean, it's just common sense that you want. It's so, so dangerous. And yet you still see people every day doing it. So I love that they have they're accommodating the addiction. Pull off and do it.
Right. Addictive behavior. Exactly.
Yeah, it really is. It's a strong pull.
And the other thing, too, is that there is a sign, and if I read it correctly, it's if you are caught twice, you lose your license.
Right.
Ooh,
that's tough. The new law, very strong penalties, yeah.
Which I believe is stronger than the DWI law, is it not?
Isn't that interesting?
Oh, I don't know.
That's because
it's 3 times and you're out with a felony for it to be a felony for...
No, but that's a very interesting point, and let's parse it for a moment, which is that.
I read that sign going the speed limit down the Northway.
Yeah.
So I am not sure exactly what it said. I would have to do more research on it.
Go ahead. Speed limit.
So who? No, I think you're right. So who texts? It's a function of age, almost entirely. Younger people text more. I know people.
I don't know. I'm pretty old, and I'm hitting that button all the time.
Well, you're young at heart, but I think you know, people of my age, they're still getting used to, internet. So
well, Yes. However, I think, and we're way off the topic here, but...
Not necessarily.
Well, we don't know yet. But but I think that we tend to say texting and driving for anything that involves us using our smartphones. So if we are trying to find a podcast,
well, that's different. Yeah.
If we are trying to look at an email, if we are trying to find what the weather is, if we're trying to put in our GPS information,
right?
All of that is very similar. It is diverting our attention away from the
from 1 second,
from the
and
road.
That's all it takes.
Yeah, I mean, it's not actually the physical act always of texting. It can be many other functions. Those phones do everything.
Right.
So any of those.
Well, not
will,
everything.
It doesn't matter because soon they'll be driving our cars.
They can help you do everything.
Soon they'll just be driving the cars. They don't need drivers
That's
anymore.
That's true, Rosemary.
I think that I had to rent a car, and it was a Volvo, and it has a light now on the left-hand side on the door frame on the driver's side that alerts you when something's in your blind spot. Now, how cool is that?
That's cool.
Very cool. Wow. I can't afford one, but I think that's a great device.
Still amazing
stuff.
Well,
pretty
stuff.
Soon it'll be on everything, I'm
sure. That's what I was thinking,
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC goes from Noble Pies Cafe and Pie Shop, Warwick, New York. Handmade sweet and savory pies, now taking orders for holiday pies and shipping holiday pies. NoblePies.com. St. Bernard's School of Theology and Ministry, Albany, an accredited graduate school of theology, offering 3 master's degrees and courses for audit and enrichment, classes 4 nights a week, stbernards.edu. Union Institute and University Master's Counseling Psychology Program, Brattleboro, Vermont, now extending application deadline for winter term to December 15th. 15th, myunion.edu, and the Blue Marble, a world of gifts, Amherst, Massachusetts, featuring goods from across the country and around the globe with a concentration on handcrafted, American-made and fair trade items. TheBlueMarble.biz.
Welcome back to the Roundtable and our panel this morning. Rosemary Romeo is with us, and Alan Chartok is here as well, and we're waiting for the arrival of Mike Spain, the associate editor of the Times Union, who was caught in traffic, which we feel bad for him.
Gave us a lot to talk about the first segment.
Yes, that's right. And Mike will come in, and we'll have stories from the TU as well, and we'll talk about other things. So I'm sure Mike will be in after the break. Let us talk about there's an article in the New York Times this morning about the House, as the Times put it, straggled back to the Capitol on Monday night with just 2 weeks left before its likely entry into the congressional record book for underachievement, still clinging to hopes that deals can be reached in the coming days on a budget and other once-routine bills that could ease some of the sting. But even those accomplishments could be thwarted by a basic political calculation. Many Republicans believe they are getting such good traction from their attacks on President Obama's stumbling health care law that they feel less compelled to produce results, any results.
Yeah. Well, I believe they weren't going to produce any results, any results, period. I think that they were committed to that. But I also think there's a lot of self-deception going on here about this Obamacare. I think they really think that that is what is going to change their fortunes. They still have their gay issues. They still have the Hispanic issues in which people are holding them responsible. I don't see, and polls are, may not be finding Obama terribly popular right now, but they're sure not finding the Republicans popular either. I think it's a big mistake. I think Chris Christie, by the way, is doing the right thing because I think people think that he is a guy who can get along with both sides. And even though he's getting criticized for it, I think we like it.
Yeah, people like it. Rachel Maddow also had quite a rant about this last night, too, and made very good points about just leave politics out of this, leave policy out of this. This Congress is not doing things that have been routine for decades.
Sure.
There's no farm bill. There's no defense spending bill. There's none of the routine legislation that keeps government going. It's all captive now in this partisan fight. And that means we are not functioning well as a government, as a nation. That's just reprehensible.
Well, if at all. I mean, it just seems that anything we try to do is just stopped and thwarted. And you wonder, whenever anything comes up, it's stopped. And I think both sides are to blame on this. But it seems to me insane that there can at least be, going back to some good old days where you said, okay, well, we'll have our fight about this, but let's go on and do the work that we have to do.
Yeah, we frequently in this program talk about, oh, we need a system-wide change. Let's take a look at the whole budget. Let's take a look at the whole education system, another story we might talk about today. They're not performing well. Healthcare, of course, was a whole systematic change. And when you do that, maybe the idea that there are no routine bills, that everything leads into the system we have, maybe that's right. But we have to figure out some way to keep going while we're looking at those big systematic changes.
Did you guys hear this morning on NPR? A wonderful, I think it was this morning, a piece about Thomas Paine versus Edmund Burke.
That was wonderful.
That was a great
start of the fight between left and right.
Yeah, except that Burke, who I quote all the time on different things, was a conservative, all right. But he believed you had to nurture those things that were working, as opposed to the ones as starting over.
Right, and Thomas Paine was the revolutionary, saying tear it all down.
Yeah,
and in many ways, that kind of dynamic has switched. It's now liberals. Yeah. The left saying, hey, it's
around.
Working. We got to
don't mess with Social Security.
Right. Or with any health care, with that, whatever. And it's the conservatives saying, no, it's all bad. Change it all over. Rip it all down. So it's very fascinating.
I was, this is changing the subject ever so slightly, about the president, about his approval ratings. And I was watching on Friday night, I believe, the president was the guest on 2020, and Barbara Walters was interviewing the president and the first lady. I found it to be a fascinating interview for many reasons. But one of the things that he said, they used the number that his rating is currently at 41%. And it was the lowest rating of his career.
His tenure, yeah.
And said that it is abysmal. And I thought, well, you know, 41%. Yes,
George,
I mean, it's
George W. Bush's at points.
22%. 22%. And I just, if the perception is that it's a complete failure at 41%, and I don't know. I mean, we've had this discussion many times, Alan, about, you know, what these things even mean. But a lot of it is perception, right?
I don't think 41% is that bad. If you want to see something bad.
I don't think it is either.
If you want to see something bad, take a look at the congressional numbers.
Well, right. We're talking about outgoing presidents now. At 22%.
Yeah.
And you have a president of the United States who has a 41% approval rating. It's obviously a dip. And he said to Barbara Walters, making a joke, saying, look, I have nowhere to go but up. I mean, I would argue that, but that is one way to look at it.
It's just a popularity thing. I mean, the only poll as to popularity that really counts is the election, and he's past that one.
We're going to take a break. Mike Spain has arrived.
Great.
We're going to go over to NPR News. You can join us as well, WAMC.org, roundtable, WAMC.org, to join in on the conversation. We will continue our panel conversation after this short break. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok is here, and Rosemary Mayo joins us, and Mike Spain is in from the traffic, and it's a delight to have him with us. Now we just have to make it worth that horrible commute.
Well, you've spoken enough about traffic, so I'll pass on that one.
Excellent. So let's go to you and start off and talk about some stories that are making news in the pages of the Times Union, and we'll start off with the Moreland Commission.
Yeah, the way our state editor, Casey Seiler, put it, the Moreland Act Commission report found that Albany's political scene is essentially an ethical swamp. with widespread corruption ranging from ruthless pay-to-play lawmakers and business interests all the way to sleepy campaign finance investigators. It was a 98-page, stinging 98-page report that was released Monday, and it also had an action plan, as Casey says, for draining this swamp. That includes sweeping changes in state elections, ethics, campaign finance laws, and enforcement. This is just the preliminary report of the Moreland Act Commission, you know, which was formed last July after the legislative session ended and Governor Cuomo was unable to get any campaign finance reform or ethics reform through the legislature. So this was his way of maybe arming himself with a bully, a club, I guess, so he can beat it in January when the legislative session comes back and try to get something through based on these recommendations. Is this fact or fiction, Alan?
Well, no, what is interesting to me is, and I know Rosemary does the same thing, I was looking for the story. Everybody had been waiting for the Moreland Act Commission to do it. You had to go to the New York section of the New York Times to find it. It was not on the on the front page of the Times. The Daily News and the Post barely gave it mention. The Daily News did a little bit better. So there's a certain ho-humness about this. Okay, we all know what's wrong. Now, do you want the issue or do you really want to make a change, Governor? And I think that's what's going on here that I find very interesting. We could have made this laundry list a long time ago and did. We've talked about it, you know, for years. What I'm thinking here is, and I have a question for the governor. Do you want to fix it or do you want the issue? Now, you'll remember that the Daily News and Ken Lovett did a great story back when they started to give out subpoenas. The governor's guys allegedly were saying, no, don't send it to the Democratic State Committee and don't send the subpoena to the legislature. Even the legislature, as I remember it. Now, of course, now that's all turned around and the governor's taken great credit because the legislature to some degree has succumbed, you know, and has agreed to answer the subpoenas. But again, I think everybody out there, and I know we have a very smart group of people listening, are asking the following question. Governor, do you want the issue or do you want to make a change?
Well, it's a great issue. You can criticize the legislature every day for all kinds of things, and the report noted that in some cases deplorable conduct is perfectly legal in New York
State.
Without
question,
yeah,
right.
And the law needs to
legal
be changed.
Bribery.
Right, legal bribery. It needs to be changed, and I hope he wants it
Let's try to remember he's got $30 million in his own.
Yeah, he's in a good position to not need to raise any more money.
Well, that's one way of seeing it.
Yeah.
The other way of seeing it is, where'd that $30 million come from? Why do people give you $30 million? Especially when you're talking about legal
bribery. Not to clean up government.
What'd you say?
Not to clean up government. They don't give you that kind of money to clean up government.
No,
is that
don't.
What you're thinking?
They give money generally to have access after the person is elected. They want to make their case to that.
There's an understanding,
official.
A wink.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, you know, you can rate investigative reporting, which is in a sense what this is about. And what you look for is who is to blame, what's new, and can anything be done about it? I'm not sure this report delivers on that. There's nothing in there strikingly new. The arrests the past year kind of pointed out some of the same things it did. It doesn't lay blame anywhere. It's just kind of all generalized and politic. And as to what can be done, it has a list, but even that seems not prioritized. It's kind of like, here are all the things that might work.
And there's disagreement among the panelists themselves about what the remedy is. Campaign finance reform in the form of publicly funded state elections.
Well, we're going to give them money to run for office now? That's not my position.
It looks
but
like
that
the
is
New
the
York
position.
Right. And there's reasonable opposition to that, and some groups have already come out and said they're going to oppose it. Unshackle New York is one that has already vowed to oppose it if it comes up. They're questioning the constitutionality and also just whether it makes sense to pay politicians to run.
So anyway, that's why I would rate this as a C, and I'd put it in the inside pages.
So that's so interesting. Unshackle
New York. Put it on the front page.
Yeah, well, of course.
Well, it's Albany, and you should have. Yeah,
but yeah, Unshackle New York is interesting in that that's the group of people, correct me if I'm wrong, who've been very supportive when Andrew Cuomo became the governor and had a sort of conservative tax hike agenda and the rest of it. So when he got less conservative, we didn't hear quite as much from Unshackle New York. At least I don't think so. And so, you know, those are people who are likely to give you some money, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, the governor is evolving on this.
Yes, just like Kirsten Gillibrand, she's evolving.
So what's the next step, this? After the report is out, what happens next?
Well, they bring it to the legislature.
Right. I mean,
and the legislature has to decide whether or not they're going to cut their own throats.
One of the things it calls for is a beefed up establishment of a beefy enforcement agency to enforce the campaign finance laws and to go after people who violate it. You know, that seems like either doing it by beefing up the Board of Elections,
which they're not going to do.
They want to change. They want to do away with it.
The Board of Elections,
or creating a new entity.
Yeah. The Board of Elections is pretty well regarded as a disaster.
A toothless tiger.
People don't have any respect for it at all.
Am I mistaken in thinking one of the major recommended reforms is to set up a similar system to New York City's, where it's that's not a great recommendation, is
Why?
It? Because how well has it worked in New York City?
Well, I think it's worked rather well in terms of your candidacy if you can get matching funds to run for office. In other words, there are limitations. Six times what you raise, up to a certain amount.
If you opt in for it.
If you opt in
for it. If you're wealthy, you don't need to.
Well, the Supreme Court of the United States has made that clear. Do whatever you want.
So, speaking of unshackling, there's another story having to do with strip searches in the city of Albany.
That's right. Our reporter, Alicia Santo, last year had done a story that quantified the number of strip searches that Albany police were conducting. She chose a period between January 2009 and September of 2012. There were 655 strip searches in that period. 22% of those took place at private addresses. Sometimes police ordered anyone present at the location to remove their clothing, even if they were not identified as suspects. And that will no longer happen under a revised policy announced by the Albany Police Chief Stephen Krokoff. They're going to do much fewer searches. And they were going to establish stiffer requirements to justify a strip search. And interestingly, they're also going to have a separate policy for dealing with transgender suspects. Krokoff, speaking about that, said that those searches are potentially embarrassing situations, and he said that the department's new approach will help keep the person's dignity intact. And he does cite the article in the Times Union last year as the reason that he's doing this and that he looked into it and came up with this policy. And he says you have to have the ability to do it, but you also have to respect people's rights. And this is getting applauded by the New York Civil Liberties Union and others as a very positive step. It's interesting.
Rosemary, you travel a lot. Have you ever been searched in the airport?
I have not. I was detained in Israel because I had traveled to an Arab country. Uh-huh. So my friend and I were detained for a while, but no, it was incredibly respectful.
Well, but I've been searched because of my suspenders. They have a little metal on them. So they inevitably, I have to get searched. And the guys use their hands up and down your legs, and they tell you exactly where they're going and what they're going to do and, you know, all the rest of it.
It's different than being forced to take your clothes off.
Well, it's different, though. But it's not nice.
Well, you know, police agencies have maintained, and, you know, security agencies have maintained the need to do this. But what they're doing here is they're establishing requirements. There has to be a reason why they do it. They just can't, walk into a room where they smell marijuana and say, everybody take off their clothes. We're going to start searching you.
And it's that balance between safety and security,
right,
and your civil rights. And this is a role for the press. Congratulations to the Times Union for doing that. You looked at
to Alicia, sure.
To Alicia, absolutely, mm-hmm, who mm-hmm. looked at this is why we have a First Amendment, that it looked at how the police were operating and called it into question. And the police, you know, and kudos to him too for saying yes.
Right,
we need
the
to
police
change.
Chief, right? He saw the information, looked into it, and came up with a policy to address the
this
situation.
Is how government is yeah. supposed to work. Very, very cool story.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will continue and have one story I really want to get to this morning. So we'll talk about that and other cool things when we return. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support for WAMC goes in Wiawaka, Lake George, New York, an enrichment revitalization historic lakefront retreat created by and for women since 1903. WIAWAKA.org for events. Adelphi University Hudson Valley Center, a master's in social work, working to prepare students with the knowledge and skills to serve diverse populations in their communities. Adelphi.edu/Hudson Valley. Pure Catskills, supporting local farm, food, and wood businesses, clean water, and working landscapes throughout the Catskills region. PureCatskills.com. And Davidson Brothers Brew Pub, featuring food, ales, entertainment, and more, serving lunch and dinner 7 days a week in downtown Glens Falls, New York. DavidsonBrothers.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Did anyone see 60 Minutes on Sunday?
I can't remember that far back.
It's Tuesday.
But the family was in town. There was all that turkey.
I understand. So Amazon has announced that they are looking. This is all in the formulative process. But that they would be able to revolutionize drone package delivery. So if you were to order your whatever, a suitcase, whatever you order from Amazon, a book, a movie, whatever, and then they put it in the drone and they send it off, and you could get it within 30 minutes of ordering it, of pressing the order button. And the little drone comes down and it goes right in in front of your house, and it drops the package and it lets it go, and then it speeds back and it picks up another package, and it's like the stork with the babies.
Yeah, it's like the stork.
And
well,
off
you
it
need
goes.
A drone pad on your front lawn.
Yeah, like a little drone launch or a landing pad.
Landing pad.
And you know, you think of this, well, this is stuff of science fiction, this is silly. And yet the money that this company is putting into this and the power, I mean, let's not forget what they were able to do with the U.S. Postal Service of getting them to deliver on Sundays, which in some ways seems to me more of a technological marvel and accomplishment than even the drones. But it is it's really something that is quite
well, think
amazing, considering you could get a package in a day.
Mm-hmm.
Three hours.
We do that.
You know, FedEx.
Right. We'll no, but I mean, oh, right now you can get it in a day.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you better hope for that you can stay with that for a while, because, you know, it isn't going to happen.
It's hard to talk about this because it is still
FCC,
science fiction.
FAA. All the rest.
Well, they're saying not 3 hours. They're saying 20 minutes. They're saying that by the time you order, by the time you press send, to the time it's at your doorstep is 20 minutes.
The cost of it would be prohibitive.
I would think so.
The danger of all these, we all have our own drones flying around. It's just ridiculous. Somebody's got to figure that out. There's a potential for invasion of privacy, and danger is so enormous. This is not going to happen quickly. A friend of mine, who is a former Washington Post reporter, joked yesterday that maybe this is why Bezos bought the Washington Post. Post so that he can influence the messages going to Congress about this, to tamp down all the questions and the horror.
Pay to play, they call it.
The the headline of the Washington Post article was Amazon's drones and the rise of ostentatious R&D. And that's really the point of the story, which is that these days, U.S. firms aren't investing in coming up with new ideas as much as they used to, but they are spending so much money on these
gadgets.
Yeah, of kind of out there, different thinking outside of the box ways of delivering their product, manufacturing their product, and of course the products themselves.
Well, you know, I have to say that I know this is going to seem a little provocative, and that there will be people, feminists, post-feminists, and others who take exception to this. But there really aren't enough things for men to buy. there really aren't. So, you know,
I'll have my list to you tomorrow.
You see my list?
So a drone or two, you know, or...
They're legal, I want one. I have some uses for it. But, yeah.
Think of what it could do to investigative reporting.
Yeah.
But, you know,
but
maybe...
can I ask a story? Yeah. Just a question.
Sure. Yeah.
If you need a toolbox in 20 minutes, why don't you just go to a hardware store and get a toolbox?
I was a big supporter of brick and mortar, and we should defend what we have. Sure. You know, we don't need to lose more institutions. But go into a store these days, they're rude staff, not enough staff. They're not stocked.
Oh,
if you have a problem, they'll say, go online.
I take great exception to that, Rosemary. I mean, I go shopping in Great Barrington. I want to support local stores. And I tell you, I go into our local hardware stores, and they can't be more solicitous and more decent. So
to go to Great Barrington. I'll tell you, I went into a local store to buy a pasta machine.
Don't!
I'm not going to name it.
Okay.
I went to buy a pasta machine, and they go, oh, we don't have it. Go online. Okay.
Well, yeah, that's sort of a surrender right there.
Yeah, but
you know, I think that I get the help I ask for when I go into big box type stores. And you know, the problem is you might go back home and order it online after you've had all the help from the
personnel at the store. Alicia, you're listening. Here's your next investigative reporting story.
Now, by the way, far be it for me to say that I would not be the first one to want to have a drone come up to my house and drop off whatever I've ordered, because that just sounds cool.
Yeah.
Yes,
you know, the first time you have it done.
Maybe a do not drone order that you can sign up for with the somebody. You know, the do not drone, do not drone.
Oh, yeah.
See, get it? No.
I do. Uh-huh. Yeah, but
also George Jetson-ish, you know, cars that drive themselves.
Nice.
Yes, that was
nice,
good.
Nice, Mike. And there's that futuristic quality to it, and it's a little creepy, and yet you think, okay, well, that would be.
But the first places that this makes sense is rural, hard-to-get-to places. What if you lived on a mountaintop, or what if you live in, like,
Washington
County?
I do live on a mountaintop. Right, I was about to say.
That's your choice.
You know, you might, I mean, there, you know, think of the out west, you know, where there's not a lot of people per square mile. I mean, there
but
might
here
be
again,
ways to
we
get.
We still have local stores.
No. I mean, you know, if you need something unique, like a special piece for your car to repair your car, you know, and the local gas station doesn't have it, you know, I suppose it would be possible to have them get it delivered in 2 or 3 days, but you want to have that carburetor right now, you know. But there may be important delivery of medicine to remote places. There may be...
That's a great idea.
It'll be defined by the greatest need, you know, and then after it sort of happens, then it'll become more consumer-oriented. But, you know, there'll be some applications of this, I think, that will be good.
Mm. Well, if it happens, I think you have a better chance.
It will happen one way or another.
Well, I don't know.
One way or another.
I think scientifically, you have a much better chance of, you know, as beam me up, Scotty, taking our
I'm still waiting for that.
Corpuscles, and we'll change, you know, and forms, and then we'll be
shipped
out.
Better chance of that?
we'll shipped out to California. That's going to happen, you know.
Well, there was a story not long ago about vacuum tubes. You know, the technology of putting a vacuum tube in San Francisco and getting to L.A. in 28 minutes and things like that. You
no
know.
More traffic jams.
Yeah. I mean, and they say the technology is there. It's a matter of building it.
Well, we will see, won't we? We will see. Let
no,
us go.
No, we won't.
You don't think so?
No.
Well, I mean, we'll see one way or another.
Our children happens, we'll
nobody will ever fly above the ground in this country. You see, like the Wright brothers.
Can you see back to the future? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's coming.
Do you think, why do you think 60 Minutes ran the story?
Get more viewers.
Well, the ancillary point was the dearth of government-funded research and development and how, you know, that's going to let America fall behind technologically, and that's the risk. But these companies like, you know, these big thinkers like Bezos and the guys, you know, that run Google, you know, they're investing a lot of money, like, into the automated cars, you know, which we referenced earlier. You know,
the
so
glass,
I mean,
but
first we should teach
glass.
Our kids how to do math and read.
Oh boy!
Right. Well, yeah, that wouldn't be too bad.
Well, these guys
would
know how to do math and read. These Google guys, you know.
Real quick, let's do the talk about the RNC, the Republican National Committee.
Racism ended.
They tweeted today. We remember Rosa Parks' bold stand and her role in ending racism. With a quote, "You must never be fearful about what you are doing when it is right," Rosa Parks. And they sent this out yesterday morning at 9:58. And it said, "Today we remember Rosa Parks," on December 1st, I apologize. "We remember Rosa Parks' bold stand and her role in ending racism."
Good intentions gone awry, you know. You're writing short, only have 140 characters, or trying to get a good message on rights, on civil rights, and it backfired terribly because
racism, of course, has not ended. Why can't you just do the quote and say,
ended.
"Today we remember Rosa Parks," and have the quote done?
Or helping to end racism in
140 characters. That's why they didn't do helping. It's
easy
to edit.
The limitations of social media.
Exactly. And not just social media. Remember the Martin Luther King statue where he had a long quote, and I actually thought it was well edited, but many people saw that as making him sound wrong. And this is the same thing. And I kind of feel sorry for them, because anybody who writes has been in a similar situation where you write something with good intentions and it's read wrong. On the other hand, I thoroughly enjoyed the blasting they got from other tweeters saying racism ended, for example, when the iPhone came out in both white and black. And there's a whole series of them. They're hysterical.
Well, there's a certain hypocrisy, I think, from some of these people who were amongst those who did very little to end racism and are doing very little to end racism in this country.
Now, there's also a view that the heroes of the civil rights movement have been turned into something like cartoon characters, untouchables like Rosa Parks or Martin Luther King. They were real-life people who struggled. They were not beloved in their time. They were not perfect people. Right, and we belittle them by turning them into saints, into something that you only see, you know, as a good guy who helped us to get where we should be.
Unlike Washington and Lincoln and other people.
All people are much better when you see both their faults and their good points. Even Mother Teresa.
Jefferson.
And by the way, just real quickly, when they went to go correct it, they had more than enough characters to say the previous tweet should have read, "Today we remember Rosa Parks' bold stand and her role in fighting to end racism."
Sure. They had enough characters.
They had enough characters for that.
Yeah.
This was just
some
guy's attempt to do something that backfired.
They did it all right. Thank you all for being with us. We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll meet again tomorrow. And the roundtable continues after this short break.